The following is a lecture by Rabbi David Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is originally from Chicago. He attended Northeastern University and received his rabbinical ordination in Jerusalem. He has lectured widely in Israel and America and is currently a senior lecturer at the main campus in Jerusalem.
The mitzvah is that the Kohanim have an obligation that when they carry the Aron Kodesh, right, the what's called the Holy Ark, when they carry the Ark, so then they are supposed to carry it on their shoulders. The Ark has to be carried on the shoulders of the Kohanim. Now, if you remember, we did one of the mitzvahs earlier. I don't remember the number. It's the mitzvah of removing, not the prohibition of removing the poles from the Ark. Remember that mitzvah? The prohibition, the Ark had poles, and there's prohibition to remove the poles from the Ark, right? Remember what the idea was behind that mitzvah? You can't remove the poles from the Ark. That's supposed to symbolize that. What do the poles do? The poles are the support system for the Ark. That means, right, the pillars of Torah, the support for Torah, should never cease, right? One must never stop to withdraw their support of Torah. The support of Torah does not have to be only financial support, though it helps, right? But it's not the only type of support. In our day and age, support of Torah is also moral support. There are plenty of people who are learning Torah who have their material needs, but they haven't got their families behind them, right? And that sometimes is just as difficult as not having the financial means. Now, this Ark, before we understand why you have to carry it on your shoulder, let's understand what the Ark was. The Ark, first of all, do you know the dimensions of the Ark, how big it was? And it put everything you saw in the movies, everything you saw in Raiders, you know, put that away. I never even saw Raiders, you tell you the movie by heart. Right? Put everything out of your, whatever you saw, put it out of your mind completely. Right? What were the dimensions of the Ark? So in the Torah, the dimensions were 2.5 amos long. The Ark was 2.5 amos long by 1.5 amos wide and 1.5 amos high. Now what was contained? What is the start of this shear is the signal for them to begin drilling.
It doesn't start until 5:30.
The dimensions were 2.5 long by 1.5 wide by 1.5 high. Now when you look through, 2.5 amos by 1.5 amos, by an amma is about an amma is literally from here to here, right? Which in is somewhere between 16 and, so yeah, it's pretty small. By somewhere between 16 and 22 inches long, depending on the estimation of what the amma is, right? So 2.5 of the Ark was not this massive structure. The Ark was, you know, about yi long, right? Yi wide, right? Yi high. Now it also had a cover on it, and it was coated. It was made of three boxes. There was an outside box which was made of gold. There's an inside box made of gold. And there's a middle box. There was one box inside another. There was a middle box made of wood.
This is the Ark of the Covenant?
This is the Ark of the Covenant. This is the Aron HaBris, yeah. That's the whole Ark. It was the shape of a square box. Square box. They had the tablets inside, right? The luchos were inside the Ark. It was the square shape of a square box, and the dimensions were 2.5. By 1.5 by 1.5.
So it's just the tablets in there. Nothing.
The tablets are in there according to some. There are different opinions. What else is in there? The whole tablets are in there. The broken tablets are in there. According to some, there's a written Torah scroll. A written Torah scroll is in there. And there's an opinion that the manna came down and they put away a portion of the manna for eternity. Right, and there's according to some that portion of the manna is in the Ark also. Right? Now, what's the idea? Why would they put the manna in the Ark? Why do you think they put the manna in the Ark?
So no one can get to it.
If they could put the manna, they didn't have to stop the people. They could put the manna in the altar also, and no one would get to it because no one's allowed in there. What? It's a holy thing, but so why? In the Beis HaMikdash, remember, the Beis HaMikdash is divided up into three areas, right? You've got the area where the sacrifices are brought. You've got beyond that is what's called the area called the Holy, right? Which is where the menorah was, and the table with the showbread was there, and the small altar where they burnt the incense. And then beyond there, in the small compartment, you have the Holy of Holies, right? Why would you put the manna in the Ark? Why not put the manna in
the
They could have put it on the. They could have put it on.
Oh, you're saying
they could have put it on the
side.
They could have put right exactly. What's the full?
Because if you study Torah, you'll always have your bread.
Exactly. Exactly. The symbolism is that there is support. If you dedicate yourself, to the Torah, because in that ark, in the Holy of Holies, I mean, you dedicate yourself to Torah the proper way, then your livelihood is going to be provided for you. That's what the man is supposed to symbolize. It's exactly why God wants that man eternally stored. That people should realize that the divine support is going to go with the Torah. Obviously, it has to be done responsibly, so on and so forth. But that people should realize the divine support is going to go with the Torah. Now, when you look at those dimensions of the ark, right? What do those dimensions tell you? Right? They're 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5. When you read the portion in the Torah that discusses the dimensions of how big the menorah is and how big the table is and how big the altars are, in that section of the Torah, all of the dimensions of all the other equipment in the Beis HaMikdash, the only one with fractional dimensions is the ark. Right? One of the other ones has a couple of fractional dimensions, but the only one where all three dimensions are fractional is the ark. Right? So obviously, what do you think the Torah is trying to communicate? Commentaries say, what does a fraction tell you?
Incompleteness.
Incomplete. Exactly. Stuart, you're on a roll. Right? Incomplete. That you heard this year before, right? The fractional dimensions tell you that there's some type of incompletion. That means that the attitude towards Torah study has to be what? No matter how much you've learned, you can still grow more. Right? There's always more towards, and that's why one of the reasons why Torah is compared to a fig tree. Right, the difference between a fig tree and all other fruit trees is that other fruit trees they reach their harvest at the same time. Right, when you harvest an apple tree, you strip the entire tree. Right, and then you wait for the next season. The fig tree, and I know this is true because A, it's Torah, so that got to be true. B, when I was a little kid, we had a fig tree outside my house. Right, when we used to climb the fig tree. So the same figs that one day, what the Gemara says is when you go to the fig tree. Is every time you go searching, that you'll always find another fig. You just got to look under the right leaf, and you'll find another fig is ripening. That means there's no end to the figs, right? You don't remove them all at once. Torah is the same way. No matter how much Torah you've learned, there's always more depth to the Torah. There's infinite depth to the Torah. There's always something more and something new to be discovered, right? So the person, there's a basic recognition that a person has to recognize that when he studies Torah complete, there's always more Torah to be studied. There's no such thing as having learned the entire Torah, now I'm finished, right? Because once you've learned it, then you got to start forgetting it, right? But even without that, because the Torah is God's quote-unquote, like symbolically and metaphorically, God's mind, therefore it's infinite, as God's mind, as God himself is infinite, therefore there's infinite depth to the Torah. Right? That's the idea of the dimensions of the Torah. Now, something very peculiar about the Torah. When they put the Torah, the Aron Kodesh, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? Let's say this room is the Holy of Holies, which to a certain extent it is, right? Compared to the rest of it, what else is going on at this hour, right? This room is the Holy of Holies. What are you laughing at? Right? I don't mean in the Yeshiva. I mean in general, right? It says in Pirkei Avos, when 10 people sit and study Torah together, what does it say? The Divine Presence rests among them. So the Divine Presence is in this room. Right, whether you agree or not, it is right. Now, if you tell me that you see it, then you really got problems. Right? But the divine presence is there when you study Torah. Right, this is the Holy of Holies, huh?
Just don't put your hand up.
Yeah, right. Let's say this table was your own Kodesh. Now, let's say this is the Holy of Holies. The dimension from that wall to that wall is 20 amos, right? And this is the ark over here, right? If from that wall to that wall would be 20 amos. How far would it be if you measured from that wall to the beginning of the table and from that wall to here? How far would that be? 9 amos, let's say 9 amos, or 8.5 amos, or 7.5, depending on how it was situated, right? According to the Gemara, when you measured from that wall to this part of the ark, 10 amos, right? In spite of the fact that it was 20 amos across the road. From that wall to this part was also 10 amos. What does that mean? That the Aron HaKodesh did not take up any room in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Something that's completely beyond any type of comprehension for a human being. That something physical, which was physical, can possibly be it's physical but non-physical. Right? It's almost a contradiction in terms. Yet the Aron Kodesh was like that. Now, we'll understand why in a second. What's the mitzvah over here? The mitzvah over here is that they have to carry the Aron Kodesh on their shoulders. Right? The Kohanim are told that they have to carry their Aron Kodesh on their shoulders. How did the Jews get into the land of Israel? When the Jews came after Moshe Rabbeinu died, who led them into the land of Israel?
Joshua.
How did they get, they're coming from the west, they're coming from Jordan, right? They're coming from Jordan to Israel. When you come from Jordan to Israel, the Allenby Bridge, right? The Allenby Bridge wasn't up yet. Exactly. How did they have to get in? How did they cross the Jordan River? So in the Nach, if you look in the third chapter of Yehoshua, I think the third chapter, it says that they came to the Jordan River, and Yehoshua, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu is compared to the sun, and his disciple Yehoshua is compared to the moon. Moshe Rabbeinu split the sea, Yehoshua split the Yarden, right? The Jewish people, there was another splitting. You know, people don't know this, right? There was another splitting. We always talk about the splitting of the Red Sea. The Yarden split also. And this is not a Midrash, in case anybody's skeptical about Midrashim, which you shouldn't be, right? But it's not a Midrash. This is a verse in scriptures, right? In the first book of Yehoshua, it talks about how the Jewish people went, and they entered the Yarden, and when they entered the Yarden split, right? The Kohanim went in there with the Ark, they stood there, the river split, the people went across. Then, based on the verses, the Gemara says there's something peculiar happened. The Ark backed up and went back to the bank where it had come from. Right? It went back to the other side, and the waters closed up. So now you're left with a problem. Those Kohanim are standing on the other side of the Yarden with the Ark, and the people across the Jordan River. Right? Now they're standing where the Ark. Right? How did they get from where they are into the land of Israel? Right? So the Gemara, the Aron, there's something very unique about the Aron Kodesh. The Aron was nose es nose of. The Aron carried those that carried it. What does that mean?
So they just walked in.
The Aron looked like, the people carrying the Aron Kodesh looked like they were actually carrying it. Right? Mm-hmm. But in fact, who was doing the carrying? The Aron was carrying the people. That's why, symbolically, you know, they always use this as a Musar lesson. That the people who are supporting the people who are studying Torah, who's actually supporting whom?
Right.
Giving support to the people who give the money. Right? You say that after you got the money, by the way. Right? You don't tell that before. Don't tell that before you got the money. After you got the money, you say, oh, by the way, I'm doing you a favor by letting you give me money. Right? Well, okay, great. I don't need any of your favors. But in the ultimate reality is that that's what's happening, that we're giving the support to the people who are carrying us. Now, they were carried across. They have to get across the Yarden with the Aron. Right? So how did they get across the Yarden? So the answer is that the Aron Kodesh, you know, there are two types of miracles. And when you think of a miracle, there are two types of miracles. What's the ultimate miracle you think of?
The Red Sea.
Splitting of the sea. Name a miracle. Splitting of the sea. By the way, the bad news is that the Gemara says that it is difficult for God to match people up as splitting the sea. Right? That means every time a couple makes a commitment to each other, a couple gets married, that's considered splitting the sea. Right? Just keep that in mind. Right? That is no less a miracle. There's no less a miracle. The Gemara says that there was a Roman, some Roman lady asked one of the sages, what's God been doing since he created the world, now what's he been doing? Right? So he said to her, he's been matchmaking. Right, he's been mizavik zivugim, it's matching people up. She said, that's not so tough. So she called in a whole bunch of her slaves, and she lined them up. She said, you're going to marry you, you're going to marry him, you're going to marry him. Right? She matched them up and told them to go get married. Right? They came back the next day. This one was bruised, this one had a broken arm, this one had a broken foot. Yeah, well, what's the problem? I can't stand him, I can't stand her. They couldn't stand each other. She came there, she said, well, I see, it's much more difficult. You remember when the Moonies did that, about maybe 10, 15 years ago, where the Reverend Sun Young Moon took about 5,000 of his followers, and he had a mass wedding for about 5,000 of his followers. Remember that? He matched them up, right? I don't know. We don't have any statistics about how those wet marriages went, right? But that's what this Midrash always reminded me of. The point is that when you think of a miracle, the basic miracle is splitting the sea. Now, what happens when you split the sea? It's a pretty fundamental idea. When you split the sea, what happens to nature?
That's
a miracle. Nature stops performing the way it's supposed to perform. That means not only it stops performing, nature is set aside in the face of the miracle. You got to get through the sea. Nature is pushed aside, so to speak, and you walk through the sea. You got to get through the Yarden. What do? Nature is set aside. You walk through the Yarden. That's one type of miracle. What about the miracle of the Aron Kodesh in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where the Aron Kodesh does not take up any space? There, you're not pushing nature aside. You're not pushing. Nature is unaffected by that. Right? Nothing is affected for this miracle to happen. Here's the difference between the two. Subtle difference. One type of miracle is that there's some change in nature. There's another miracle where there's no change. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to get the Torah. How long was he up on the mountain for? 40 days and 40 nights. What did he eat?
Nothing.
Right? He didn't eat food. That's certainly a miracle. Was anything in nature set aside to perform that miracle? No. Nothing in nature had to be pushed aside for that miracle to happen. The Aron Kodesh was on such a holy level, the Aron Kodesh is so high and holy, that it's completely, you don't need to push nature aside for the Aron Kodesh, because the Aron Kodesh is so completely holy and beyond nature. Right? Therefore, nature doesn't have to be set aside. You said before, those Kohanim, how did they get across with the Aron Kodesh? It kind of flew them across. It's more than that. It was beamed across. Right? And the Aron Kodesh, we can relate to it. It's interesting. We can relate to it. Right? Why? Because we've seen TV, so we can relate to beaming. Not so far, but you have something beamed. Right? If somebody would tell you 200 years ago, they'd say, come on, what are you talking about? Right, Scotty? Right? But if you can do it, if nowadays that we've all been educated, right, we've been trained properly, so now, if they tell you there's a medrash that says the Aron Kodesh can get from one place to another without you seeing it move, oh, come on. But in Star Trek, hey, one sec. I had a guy here in Yeshiva, by the way, who believed, the guy, remember, he was here, he said, we're going to get there. We're going to get there where we can beam people, right? And if I took a survey in this room, I'd hate to say publicly what I think the results of the survey would be. If I said, do you think that one day we could beam people? Because most of you would probably say, what, you mean they can't really beam people? Right? So I'm not even going to take the survey, right? But the Medrash, how did they get the Aron Kodesh across? So if that's the survey, you know that Aron Kodesh got across the Yarden? Not that they walked across. Not that it even got the Aron Kodesh, wherever it needs to be, that's where it is. Wherever it needs to be, that's where it is. That it's completely and utterly unaffected by the physical world. So wherever it needs to be, that's where the Aron Kodesh is. What you're saying, it got itself across. Well, if it got itself across, what about the Kohanim holding on to it? Obviously, somebody holding on to the Aron Kodesh. It wasn't just like, hey, guys, I need a couple of volunteers here. Aron Kodesh needs to be carried. I got a couple of guys coming over, right? The Aron Kodesh had to be at a very high level. There's a medrash that says the Levium, when you look at the count of the Bnei Israel and the Midbar. Yeah, I was like, can you just open one window a little bit? I could think it open if I want to, right? But I don't want to hide the miracle. Right? There's a medrash that says when you count the tribes in the desert, when you counted the tribes, the Levium were significantly fewer than the other tribes. There were significantly fewer Levium than the other tribes. When you look at the Levium, are about 22,000. The other tribes are 40,000, 50,000. Gemara says, why? Where were all the Levium? Gemara says they were the ones in charge of carrying the Aron Kodesh, and as a result, a lot of them were dying. They were dying as a result of lack of preparation of being in contact with the Aron Kodesh, right? So when the Levim were holding their Aron Kodesh, they were dying because you had to be a certain state of preparedness in order to come into contact with the Aron Kodesh. Anybody touching the Aron Kodesh was transformed into a beyond nature type of holiness. So those same Kohanim were beamed across with the Aron Kodesh, right? That's where the Aron Kodesh ended up, where it was supposed to. The mitzvah over here is you're meant to carry the Aron Kodesh. When they do carry it, like any miracle, it's always, the miracle is disguised as much as possible to make it look like something is actually going on, right? So when you saw them walking, you saw people walking, chances are you would have seen their feet on the ground. But who's actually carrying who? The Aron Kodesh is carrying the people. The mitzvah is that the Aron Kodesh has to be up on the shoulders, right? That the poles of the Aron Kodesh have to be on the shoulders. Now, when David HaMelech, when King David brought the Aron, he wanted to transfer the Aron Kodesh. At a certain point, he was transferring the Aron Kodesh from one place to Yerushalayim, to Ir Dov. He wanted to bring the Aron Kodesh to Yerushalayim. It was before the Beis Hamikdash was built. And what they did was they put the Aron Kodesh on a wagon and was being drawn by oxen on a wagon, which was a mistake. David HaMelech made a mistake. Gemara says that there was a flaw in his calculation. He made a mistake. He put it on a wagon. There's a man named Uzzah. And Uzzah was standing there with David HaMelech. Uzzah was following the wagon. At a certain point, apparently, the oxen hit a bump. The Aron Kodesh kind of started shaking. Uzzah stretched out his hand to make sure the Aron Kodesh doesn't fall, and he immediately died. Right? He died as a punishment. Right? The Gemara says, God has said to Uzzah, right, why does he die? If the Aron could carry other people, right, so certainly he could carry itself. Right? To stretch out your hand and try to just catch the Aron Kodesh from falling at a certain level is an insult. Right? If you see Chas V'Shalom, for instance, sees a Sefer Torah falling, right, you got to try to catch a Sefer Torah. Once in a while, some guy does Hagba in Shul, right, and everybody's heart stops, right? As the guy does Hagba, and the guy's kind of just wavering over there, right? And everybody's like, somebody grab that thing, right? If you see it, you have to try to help you out. But the Aron Kodesh, you should have the respect to realize that if this thing could carry other people, it could certainly carry itself. So Uzzah died, and David HaMelech was very upset. And he realized that it was his flaw, something that he had done wrong, that caused Uzzah to die. So the mitzvah over here is that they have to carry the Aron Kodesh on the shoulders. If it's not carried on the shoulders, it's obviously it's degrading to carry it, to put it on a wagon or something like that. Okay, now, just this idea of, this is pretty fundamental, the idea of getting beyond nature like the Aron Kodesh, getting to the level where you like the Aron Kodesh. That's very important. Remember that ladder? Yaakov Avinu had a ladder, the dream with the ladder, right? What's the, remember he dreamed of the ladder, he sees the angels going up and down the ladder? What's the basic idea of the ladder?
The exile.
What's that?
The exile.
Okay, there's an exile, right? There's different the exiles he sees in the dream. But what does the ladder tell the individual Jew?
It's a connection between earth and heaven.
Connection between earth and heaven, that the sky's the limit, right? You climb the ladder to the sky. Well, how do you have to do it? One step at a time, right? That means in your battle with the Yetzer Hara, normally, when you confront the Yetzer Hara, you got to battle one step at a time. You have to be careful not to jump. There's only one way where you can jump levels. There's one way where you can jump levels where you can get beyond all of the physical restrictions, you can actually jump level in the battle with the Yetzer Hara, and that's through prayer. The potency of prayer is such that prayer, you're completely without the restrictions, depending how sincere your prayer is, and through prayer, you can move up levels very quickly. We have a tradition that any type of prayer that a person does, and sometimes people say, I prayed, and God didn't answer me. Right? It's a mistake. He did answer. He said no. Right? Like, I asked God, I wasn't answered. No, he answered. God answered. Right? He said, not right now. Right? No, I can't be bothered with it right now. There's some tefillahs that are answered immediately. Some tefillahs are answered after a week. A prayer could be answered after 30 years. Right? A prayer doesn't have to be answered immediately. The only prayers that are guaranteed to be answered, meaning that to gain a positive response, your prayers in the area of spirituality, ruchnius, right? When a person davens for divine assistance in his growth, that he's guaranteed to be answered. Right now, it doesn't quite work the way we'd like. Please replenish shalom. I'd like to wake up tomorrow morning knowing all of shas, right? Well, that doesn't work, right? It means that if you daven Hashem, please Hashem, help me to learning, help me dedicate myself to be a good Jew, then God will help you. Doesn't mean it's going to happen overnight. I had some guy in the jail, he said to me that he had a problem with his girlfriend, right? So he had a big test, and he said, please Hashem, help me get through this test, right? Well, he failed. Right? He said, why didn't God answer my prayers, right? You know, I mean, he stumbled, right? He said, why didn't God answer my prayers, right? God doesn't just blame God, right? Blame God because you did something wrong. See, blame, it's very easy, right? You can't blame God because you daven. And I said, hi, God, morning. By the way, I got trouble. You want to help me out with this? I don't do this, Avera? Borepria cheeseburger. Oh, God didn't answer my prayers. Otherwise, I'm eating it. Obviously, God didn't answer my prayers, right? That's ridiculous, right? That's ridiculous. To assume that God's got God will take away, that means God's taking away your free will. That doesn't happen. But through tefillah, a person could get to the point, he could get a little at a time. He could grow tremendous levels through tefillah. The Chazon Ish, the Chazon Ish's brother said that everything the Chazon Ish achieved is as a result of his prayer, is the result of his intensity in prayer. But remember, it requires, besides intensity in prayer, it requires dedication. Okay, that's 79. Okay, so that's the Aron Kodesh.
What's the difference between Aron Kodesh now? Like sitting in the Vatican?
The deal with the Aron Kodesh is that the Aron Kodesh was hidden at the time, just before the destruction of the first temple. The Aron Kodesh was hidden, and they didn't know where it was hidden. There's a Mishnah in the sixth parak of Shkolin that says that the Aron Kodesh was, they had a tradition. Remember I told you when the Kohanim that have physical imperfections are not allowed to serve the base of English, what do? They chop wood, and they make sure they check the wood for worms, right? The wood that's going to be on the altar. So there was something called a woodshed, which was off the main temple campus, right? Yet that's where the Kohanim who were in, they couldn't, the second-rate Kohanim, so to speak, right? They would be in this woodshed, and they would check this wood constantly to make sure to deworm it, right? To take the worms out of the wood and use it in the base of Mikdash. So the Mishnah says that there one day, two Kohanim, there was a rumor circulating that the Aron Kodesh was buried somewhere, it was hidden in that vicinity. Two Kohanim were in the woodshed, and one of them said to the other one, hey, I noticed that there's a difference in the floorboarding over here, right? Come here, I got to show you this, right? That where the floor pattern is a little different over here. The Mishnah says before he managed to show it to him, he dropped dead. Right? A lot of dropping dead, you'll notice, right? He dropped dead, and they knew the Mishnah says they knew for sure that that is where the Aron Kodesh was buried. So the story with the Aron Kodesh is buried somewhere on the Temple Mount. If you could find where the ancient woodshed used to be, right, then chances are that's where the Aron Kodesh is buried, somewhere over there. Stay as far away from it as you could. Right? That's where it is. Okay.
It needs to be there.
I'm sorry, according to our tradition, that's where it was. No one took the Aron Kodesh.
The Ark needs to be there.
The
Ark needs to be there.
That's where, according to our tradition, that's where...
No, because it needs to be there, because it needs to be where it is, because where it needs to be, it'll go.
Oh, you mean that's where it needs to be? Yes, the Ark, okay. Yeah, and that's where it needs to be, so that's where it is. If you want to be consistent with it, yeah. Obviously, the Ark doesn't have free will, right? The Ark doesn't have free will. That means if we take it, we can move it. Physically, we could move it, except that when they say it needs to be there, they obviously have, they still have to go through the physical motion of carrying it there. But yes, the way it needs to be there. Yes. It says, by the way, when the Plishtim captured the Ark in war, the Plishtim were dying like flies. Right, because they captured the Ark, they were dying like flies. And eventually, they decided, we better get rid of this thing. Right, so they just put it on a wagon with oxen, and they didn't even lead it. They just said, okay, it'll take itself. Right, and the wagon, the oxen, this is a verse, it's not medrash, this is verses and not. And the oxen carried this wagon with the Ark to a certain Jew's house. That's where the Ark stayed for a while. Right? And every time it was in a place where it was supposed to be, not where it needs to, where it's supposed to be, that person was blessed. Right? But where it wasn't supposed to be, then the people started dying.
How did Philistine be able to capture it?
The Bnei Israel took it out to war with them, and they captured it. And as I say, it wasn't the type of thing that you can't get near it or you're burned off. Right? You could have, apparently they could pick it up and they could carry it, but afterwards then they would suffer some type of effects.
But in Raiders it says that
they... Yeah, the Mephorishan Raiders. So I
was thinking.
Okay. 380. 380. Okay, you've heard of Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is the second date for the Korban Pesach. Pesach Sheni means anybody that did not do the first Pesach. What is when we say the Pesach? What are we referring to?
The Seder.
Not the Seder. All right, the Korban Pesach, right? Remember, Pesach was a sacrifice. There was a sacrifice called the Korban Pesach, right? Which was a sacrifice where they sacrificed the lamb in Egypt. And then in all ensuing generations, they sacrificed the lamb on the 14th day of Nisan. Right? That was called the Korban Pesach. Anybody who did not participate in the Korban Pesach, there is a law in the Torah that if you did not participate in the Korban Pesach because either you were impure or you were far away at the time when this Korban Pesach was happening, then the halacha is you must make it up. Right? It's one of the few cases in the Torah where we see you missed an avera because you missed the mitzvah because you were disqualified. Yet there's a makeup time for it, and you have to make up the Korban Pesach. So when do you make it up? You make it up on the 15th day of Iyar. The 14th day of Iyar. 14th day of Nisan is the first one, and 1 month later is the makeup day. It's the retest for doing the second Pesach. Now, the reason that the Torah requires that there should be a makeup over here is that the Korban Pesach, remember when we spoke about the Korban Pesach, what the Korban Pesach symbolizes, right? What is there are two mitzvahs in the Torah where if for a positive command, failure to perform a positive command, when you could perform it, you get premature death, right? What are the two mitzvahs? Circumcision and Korban Pesach, right? That means putting on tefillin is a positive command, but if you fail to do so, you do not incur premature death, right? Putting on tzitzis is a positive command. Putting on the mitzvah is a positive command. There's no premature death as a punishment for these mitzvahs, right? For negative commands, there are lots of them, right? Eating on Yom Kippur, doing work on Yom Kippur, all relationships, certain foods that you eat. Many different forms of premature death in the negative. Positive commands, neglect for fulfillment, there are only two of them. There's the circumcision and there's the Korban Pesach, right? Why are these two so fundamental? Because they both represent some type of pact between God and the Jewish people. Circumcision is the pact between God and the individual, because that was made by Avraham Avinu. Korban Pesach is the pact between God and Jews. So both of them involve what?
Blood.
Both involve blood, and they have the prerequisite to be involved in the Korban Pesach is that you must be circumcised. Premature death is there are different opinions. There are different opinions, but according to most, it means death before the age of 60. Death before the age of 60 is at the hands of heaven, right? And there are different ways for death to be carried out. Right? The Gemara says that even though the divine Beis Din can no longer put people to death, right? God has ways of killing people anyway.
Please turn the tape to the other side.